presenting Paulette Goddard and Burgess Meredith in At Mrs. Beam. The United States Steel Corporation, 500,000 employees and stockholders, present the Theater Guild on the Air. United States Steel Corporation is happy to bring you the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost producers of stage plays. The Theater Guild, which presented over 150 plays in the American theater, comes to you now over the air. Tonight we bring you C.K. Monroe's comedy of hijinks in a London boarding house, At Mrs. Beam, starring Paulette Goddard and Burgess Meredith, and featuring Brenda Forbes. And here is Lawrence Langner, co-administrator with Teresa Helborn of the Theater Guild, to tell you something about the play and its players. Mr. Langner.
Ladies and gentlemen, our play tonight is At Mrs. Beam's, based on the comedy of that title by C.K. Monroe. It's a comedy about two romantic crooks and the turmoil which they create in a respectable London boarding house. Crooks have often fascinated our dramatists, and they tend to look upon larceny with a more kindly eye than do the police. Many of you remember the amusing crooks in Raffles, Alias Jimmy Valentine, and Grand Hotel. At Mrs. Beam's was written for entertainment only. It was the playwright's desire to have some fun at the expense of a group of gossipy ladies in a boarding house and really give them something to gossip about. Our play tonight must therefore be regarded as a light-hearted excursion into a somewhat wacky world. The two crooks in our play have a rough-and-tumble fight near the end of the first act, in which the jealous wife throws plates, ashtrays, and everything else in sight at her light-fingered husband. These gay characters are played by Burgess Meredith and Paulette Goddard, who in private life are Mr. and Mrs. Meredith. Miss Goddard should know something about heaving plates and crockery, since, with Burgess, she has just finished the screenplay, Diary of a Chambermaid. Burgess's fighting experience is more real. Instead of throwing plates and dishes, he was engaged in actual warfare. It was foreign rather than domestic.
And now the curtain rises on the Theater Guild production, At Mrs. Beam's, starring Paulette Goddard and Burgess Meredith, and featuring Brenda Forbes, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. Tonight we take you to London, England, in the days before World War II. There in respectable Regent's Terrace overlooking Regent's Park, we pause for a moment at number 22. It's a brownstone house. The haze of an occasional electric light, but recently converted from gas, shines through the long, respectable window. Over the doorbell is a neat white card. It says, Mrs. Dean, rooms for rent. It is in this house, with its strange assortment of rather odd characters, that our story opens with the ringing of a doorbell.
I'm coming, just a minute. I'm coming, I said. Can't you wait a minute? Oh.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is a hotel, isn't it?
Well, not exactly. It's a boarding house.
That's what I thought. We'd like a room, my wife and I.
Oh, come in, won't you? I'm Mrs. Dean.
How do you do? This is my wife. Say, how do you do to Mrs. Beam, dear?
How do you do, Mrs. Beam?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, about the room. I have only one vacant. It's on the first floor, twin beds, and you'll have a wonderful view of the park.
May we see it, please?
Well, it is a little expensive. You see, we're rather exclusive here. I have very few guests, and they've all been with the ages. Why, the oldest, that's Miss Shute. You'll meet her later. That is, if we like each other, and you decide to stay, and I decide to let you. So, you see, we're really more like a private family than a... Well, as I was saying, it's a lovely room.
We'll take it.
Will you sign the register, please?
Certainly, certainly. Madam, Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Dermott.
Thank you.
There you are.
And where are you from?
Paris. We just arrived by plane.
Goodness, you must have been in a hurry. Do you plan to stay long?
I regret I'm unable to satisfy your curiosity, madam. Our plans are elastic, aren't they, darling?
Oh, yes, they are very elastic. Huh? No, mon cher, I have spoken all by myself.
Wonderful, darling, wonderful. She said elastic. Isn't she wonderful, Mrs. B? Her English, I mean.
Oh, I have a wonderful, how you say, teacher, mister.
She's French, you know. Could you tell that, Mrs. Bean?
Oh, I guessed it. I guessed it. You can't fool me on nationalities. I have a trained ear.
You
and
don't
I recognize...
say, Mrs. Bean, her father is the Marquis de Saint-Just.
Joseph, please.
Well, I'm telling
you. Oh, dear, the daughter of a French Marquis in Regent's Terrace.
And now, madam, if you'll show us to our room.
Oh, no. That is, won't you come into the drawing room first and meet our little family?
Uh-huh.
I'm sure they'd never forgive me if... the daughter of a French marquis in my house.
But couldn't we change...
Oh, just leave your bags and trunks out there. We'll take care of everything and come this way, please. Oh, they're such lovely people. I'm sure you'll just love meeting them. Watch the step. Each one is a jewel, just a jewel. Right this way. Here we are. Isn't it dreadful? Isn't it absolutely dreadful?
You know, it's remarkable you should mention that before.
Oh, but say for shame.
It's you, you stabbed him with a knife.
Oh, come now. I can't believe anything.
But I assure you,
I assure you.
Attention, please. Attention, I said, everybody. Thank you. I wish to present you our newest guest, Mr. and Mrs.
Dermot.
Oh, yes. Miss Newman.
How do you do?
Mr. Carmichael.
Hey, please.
Master Oliver Bed Jr.
Hello.
And beautiful Mrs. Dermot. Isn't she a beauty, Mr. Dermot?
Mm-hmm. Nice weather we're having, isn't it?
Mr. Langford.
Good evening.
And last but not least, our oldest guest, the guest of honor, so to speak, Miss Evangeline Shue.
Delighted, I'm sure.
How do you do?
Enchanté. What's that? What's that you say? You speak French?
My dear Miss Shue, Mrs. Dermot is French.
Really? Really French? Are you sure? Un, deux, trois, j'irai dans le bois.
Quatre, cinq, six, cuillère des cerises.
Oh, Joseph, monsieur has not here this nursery rhyme since. Oh, is she not wonderful, this kind monsieur, to bring it so back to me so
French. You are French, oh, my dear, and at Mrs. Beams. My dear, we're going to be the very closest friends. I just feel it.
You dropped your handkerchief, Mrs. Stone. Permit me.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Dermot. Thank you very much.
That's a lovely handkerchief.
Oh, thank you.
Very lovely.
Are you also French, Mr. Dermot?
Oh, no, I'm just an ordinary American, nothing glamorous.
Oh.
By the way, Mrs. Stone, has anybody ever told you that your eyes are most extraordinary blue?
Oh, no.
Well, they are.
That is... Are they?
Now then, Mrs. Stone, no monopolizing, no monopolizing. The rest of us would like to get acquainted.
Not too. Just now, Mr. Carmichael, not just now. Listen, everybody, I have an announcement to make. They just flew in from Paris.
Oh, Paris?
You mean they were there?
Oh, tell us.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, as the oldest guest, the one who was here a full 3 years before Mr. Carmichael, my closest competitor, I consider it no more than my privilege and prerogative to ask the question. Am I correct in my assumption, Mrs. Bean?
Monsieur will ask the question.
Thank you. Mr. and Mrs. Dermot, I understand you've just arrived from Paris. Is that correct?
It is.
Then tell us, did you see the murderer?
The murderer?
Bluebeard.
Oh, Bluebeard. No, we never had the pleasure.
I saw him. You did?
You never told me, darling.
It was very early in the morning. At Les Halles, I am buying vegetables, and suddenly it appeared, a shadow in front of me, and I look up, and he is gone. But the way my arms is bound, I know it can be no one else but him, Bluebeard.
100 walls. He killed him with a knife.
39, Oliver, dear. We must be accurate.
I believe the number is 38, Miss
My dear Miss Newman, the morning paper distinctly mentioned...
The Radical Press, perhaps. The London Times stated explicitly...
He killed him with a knife. The bodies are looking...
Now, up. Oliver.
They are, too. They're looking for the trunk he keeps the corpses in. It's a big black one about this big, and it's black, and he keeps the corpses in.
Oh, quiet, Oliver. I'm sure Mrs. Dermot knows all the gruesome details.
Oh, thank you, Monsieur...
Langford. Call me Colin.
Oh, thank you, Colin. Someone has said you perhaps your shoulders, they are very, very big, no?
Oh, no. Are they?
Oh, and your hair is so blonde.
Really?
Excuse me for interrupting you, dear. Well, I'm sure Mrs. Beam would like to take us up to our room now.
Oh, certainly, certainly. You may resume, everybody. Go right on enjoying yourselves. See you all at breakfast tomorrow. Good night.
Good night,
Mrs. This way, please. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Dermot, don't you think they're darling people? Don't you think they're just... Here we are. There. Isn't it a darling room?
Not bad.
Not bad. It is magnifique.
I'll leave you to yourselves now. Good night. Sleep well. Oh, I almost forgot. Welcome to England, Your Royal Highness.
Your Royal Highness.
What is it you are doing, mon cher?
I'm looking to see if she's gone.
Is she?
She is.
Jeepers, creepers, it's about time. My phony French accent was getting me down.
You know, you did it rather well, I thought.
Well, thank you.
Not as well as my Russian accent, but not bad.
Russian is easy to get away with. Nobody understands it. I would call it cowardly to imitate a Russian.
You know, I was a little worried, though, when that fantastic old maid, what's her name, Miss Shu? When Miss Shu lets go at you with that nursery rhyme, un, deux, trois, where'd you learn that?
Oh, elementary French one. They teach it in high school.
Who told you about it?
What do you mean, who told me? I went to high school.
That seems highly improbable.
Oh, shut up. Oh, my, what a lovely view. Darling, I think I'm going to like it here.
Not too much, I hope.
Why not? I like being the daughter of a French marquis.
I don't want to worry your romantic spirit with sordid details, but it happens that the police of three countries, including this one, are looking for it. For us and for certain articles of jewelry in our trunk downstairs.
What time is it, dear? I forgot to wind my watch.
Oh, now, Laura, listen to me. Listen. Mm-hmm. That's better. Now, we've chosen this out-of-the-way boarding house as a temporary hideout, and the word that I would call to your attention is temporary. Any minute now, we may be forced to flee from the minions of the law.
I know all that, dear. Oh, look, sweetheart, through this window. Isn't that the sweetest little pond over there in the park? And look, there are ducks on it. Laura.
Laura.
Yes, dear.
I have a compliment for you. You're rather handsome, in a common sort of way, of course.
Oh, really? Well, what else am I, darling?
Well, let's see now. You're a dreg, a weed, a parasite, a crook, an international crook.
You too.
I'm a man. That's different.
Well, then, come on and kiss me.
No, I can't kiss you, Laura. This is serious. We've got to make plans.
Not me. You make the plans. I only...
No, Laura, attention. Why are we here?
To get away from the police, you said.
Quite right. But while we're here, I see no reason why we shouldn't make it interesting, as we did in Brussels and Vienna, you remember?
You mean the flimflam?
My dear, I've told you many times I don't like the word flimflam.
What's the matter with it? It's good American.
Yes, but it's too common an expression for my type of work. I prefer to think of my dishonest exploits as noble and artistic inventions created by a prince of thieves, an exalted genius, high above ordinary crooks. I'm speaking of me.
Hear, hear. What about the flimflam?
Well, we may be able to work it here, darling, right in this ignoble boarding house. But first, I must investigate some of these people.
Well, be careful how you investigate that Mrs. Stone.
Mrs. who?
Mrs. Stone. Don't think I didn't notice you looking at her downstairs. You dropped your handkerchief, Mrs. Stone. Permit me. By the way, Mrs. Stone, has anyone ever told you your eyes are a most extraordinary blue?
Well, I was just being polite.
Oh.
Speaking of looking at people, what about that young man downstairs? Now, what's his name?
Langford, Colin Langford.
Aha, I thought you'd remember it. What was he saying to you off in that corner where he maneuvered you?
He did not maneuver me. I maneuvered myself.
The question of maneuvering is beside the point.
You brought it up.
I withdraw it. What did he say to you?
He admired my eyes.
Did he? Anything else?
He thought I was the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen.
The fool?
What?
He has no right to talk to you like that.
Oh, dearest. Don't you agree with him?
Yes, I agree with him. I don't know why I do. Maybe it's the way you look framed in that window with the moonlight. Am I getting soft, Laura? Am I becoming...
Yeah, of course you are, darling. Kiss me.
No, I...
Oh, don't talk. Kiss me. Kiss me again. Come on.
Okay, darling. I've stopped talking for tonight.
People, yes, that's what they are, and so democratic.
Yes, the daughter of a French marquis.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Miss Hugh.
Good morning. See the papers. Have you seen them?
No.
The Paris Bluebeard has escaped.
Yes.
Miss Newman, Mrs. Beeman, dear Mr. Carmichael, he escaped. Just when they thought they had him in the hollow of their hands.
Well, now, Miss Hugh,
what is it? They think he's in London. Dear me.
Mr. Carmichael, what do you imagine a man like this person would do, supposing he did come to London? Where would he stay and that sort of thing?
Well, in a fashionable hotel, most likely. They always do.
Wrong, dear Mr. Carmichael, very wrong. That would be the obvious place. I think he'd select a quiet residential hotel, even a boarding house, perhaps.
Dear me, not a pleasant thought, is it?
The papers say this Bluebeard has a mole just under his left eye. Did you see that?
No.
Just under his left eye. Well, my dear, have you noticed Mr. Dermot? He has a mole just under his left eye.
Nonsense, Miss Sewer. You're trying to say that he's
in addition. I saw his luggage last night when they arrived. Paris label.
But they said this.
And did you notice the trunk? A large trunk, yes. I mean, it's an enormous black trunk, just like the one the French police are looking for.
With the bodies of dead females in it.
Yes. Now, the finger of suspicion definitely points.
Did you see the extra all about Bluebeard? He found out he wears a toupee.
Really? A toupee? Well, thank you, Oliver. Now run away, dear boy.
But what about her? His wife. Mrs. Bean said she was the daughter of a French nobleman.
I was coming to that. And my answer is, how do you know that she is his wife?
Well, if she isn't his wife,
what then is she?
A prospective victim.
Exactly. And if that's so, why, then any day we may find in his room.
Of course. Go on, say it, a bloody and battered corpse. Yes, indeed, most uncertain.
Yes, and moreover, thereafter, any of us may become the next victim. Having disposed of this unsuspecting woman who passes as his wife, he might attack anyone, Miss Newman or Mrs. Beam or me.
Here he comes.
Hello, everybody. Has anyone seen my wife?
I believe I saw her talking to Colin Langford.
Talking to... Really? Well, to change the subject, Miss Shue, I see it's confirmed that this French Bluebeard is somewhere in London.
Not a very pleasant idea, is it?
Oh, I don't know. Seems to me the man himself's a victim as much as anyone else.
Well, I can't see that I'm exactly sorry for him.
I think he's unfortunate. Consider, now. A criminal does things because he must, like the rest of us. If he needn't, he wouldn't do them because he knows the consequences as well as you do.
Well, I think he should be flayed alive, just flayed alive.
I don't. He's probably a very charming rascal. Well, see you at dinner.
Well, God dear, Mrs. Beam, how could you do it? Surely that wasn't very wise.
Played alive, that's what I said.
But surely you didn't have to tell it to him to his face.
You mean, you think he's Bluebeard?
My dear, what else have I been saying? And did you see the way he defended himself just now? What more proof could you want? He's Bluebeard, I tell you.
Good heavens, we'd better get the police.
No. We need further evidence. We'll watch his every move. Just a few days more, and we will have him in the hollow of our hands.
Why are you staring out of that window, Laura? What do you see?
The pond.
Fascinates you. Why?
Because it reminds me of something. Yeah. It reminds me of the one in Kansas City when I was a child. We were poor, terribly poor. I lived in a slum. Did I ever tell you that?
Laura, will you stop dramatizing everything? You lived in a brand new apartment house and your father was a bookie.
Tell me. Oh, tell your little wife what's hurting you. You're so bitter, dear.
Yes, bitter. That's what I am. Well, it's better to be bitter. Better bitter. Bitter better. In fact, heroes are always bitter, aren't they?
Darling, there is something bothering you. Now tell me.
No, I tell you there's nothing. I haven't the slightest hesitation in telling you that because I know you won't believe me. If you thought that I didn't have some interesting hidden trouble, you know, some secret sorrow or something, like the hero in the third act of a bad melodrama, you'd lose interest in me.
Oh, no, darling, no. Why, I love you for yourself alone.
No, Laura, the secret of my power over you is that you don't know why you love me. You never know what I'm going to do. You're not sure of me. You're not even sure that I love you. And so as long as I can keep that up, I'm quite certain of you.
Why? I love you because you're the first man who was ever kind to me.
Oh, Laura. You're such a complete actress, you don't know when you're acting and when you're not. And nothing will satisfy you, but I must act too. And the role that you've assigned to me is that of a man with a hidden sorrow.
Oh, stop that frowning, darling. You look unhealthy.
That's my hidden sorrow. Isn't it awful?
Oh, you poor boy. You do love me terribly, don't you?
And all those nice speeches, they make you feel better, don't they?
Well, Laura, we've got to make this Mrs. Bean throw us out. Evict us.
Why?
I'll come to that later. Now, my plan, my magnificent piece of strategy, consists of 2 points. The first... Are you listening?
Yes, dear.
Now, these people must be convinced. I wish to put this delicately, dearest, that we are not married. That we are, in fact, living in sin, I believe the word is.
Suppose I object to your telling them that.
How can you? You're French. And you know what the French is supposed to be.
I am not. I'm an American. And I'll show them our marriage certificate.
It's in Romanian. Nobody can read it.
Bulgarian. Bulgarian. We were married in Sofia. It's just like you to forget where.
Point
anyway,
number two, do you remember that beautiful Mrs. Stone? Yes, Stone, that we met downstairs last night?
With the blue eyes?
Yes,
I remember her. Mrs. Stone is out.
No, Laura, this is business. I've decided to become infatuated with Mrs. Stone. This is for business reasons.
Yes.
I shall attempt to lure her to America as my secretary.
That's wonderful. This is a new one. Go on, dear. Tell me why.
So they'll throw us out, don't you see? Yes. Now, those respectable people downstairs, when they hear about my immoral advances to this sweet, innocent pride of British womanhood, they'll remove us as one removes the worms from Mrs. Bean's salad. And they'll remove some other things they don't expect along with it in our trunk, jewelry and other odds and ends, including some new acquisitions.
Is it all right to ask a question?
Certainly.
Why can't we just walk out? Why do we need all the hanky-panky?
Ah, now we come to the heart of the matter. Because, dear heart, that wouldn't be melodramatic. It wouldn't be right. That would be simple, and you wouldn't like it. You'd begin to wonder if I was losing my grip. Oh, no. Everybody else in the world would do it the easy way, but not me. No, to keep you, Laura, my darling, I have to be different. I know.
Well, I don't believe a word of it. And I'll tell you something else. All this talk of yours is just pretense. What's at the bottom of it all is that you're jealous. Jealous.
Don't be an idiot.
Well, I know you well enough now. You love me. You're crazy about me, and you're jealous. You're jealous of Colin Langford because I spoke to him again today. You're jealous. Yes, you are.
Laura, this interests me. Before I go into it, I'm going to ask you one favor. Don't start throwing things until I'm finished. You promise?
I promise nothing.
Well, I'll tell you anyway. It's you that's jealous. Yes, you're jealous because I dared to look at somebody else. Fancy if I were touchy like
touchy.
You. Yes, but as it happens, it suits me to be infatuated, as I undoubtedly am with this Mrs. Stone. Laura, don't look at me that way. Put down that book.
You think I'm an idiot, don't you?
No, dearest. You're brilliant, intelligent, and don't throw that. Don't
think I'm only a child you can play with and do what you like with.
What did I say, Laura? Put down that ashtray.
I'll put it down.
Darling, I only suggested you've got Mr. Langford.
You're jealous. I knew it. You swine. Where's that water pitcher?
No, there's no water pitcher.
Where's that water pitcher? Oh, yes.
No, please.
Here it is, the water pitcher.
Look, please, dear.
You take her on as your secretary.
No,
dear, your secretary. Don't make me laugh.
No,
I saw you looking at her downstairs. I saw the way that you ogled her, and I know what's in your mind, too.
Dear.
I've just been sitting here waiting for you to get your head down, darling. Here it comes.
Oh,
ha!
I don't know.
But he seemed to... Oh, I beg your pardon.
Will you come in and save me?
My room is just next door.
Will you stop her? She's killing me.
Oh, you'd like to add one more to your list, eh? You, Casanova. You, Henry VIII. You,
please.
You, Bluebeard. That's what you are. A bluebeard.
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 Bluebeard. Let me out
The curtain has fallen on the first act of the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by United States Steel. Tonight we are bringing you C.K. Monroe's comedy, At Mrs. Beale's, starring Paulette Goddard and Burgess Meredith, and featuring Brenda Forth. Now, before our second act begins, here, speaking for United States Steel, is the well-known reporter of the American Broadcasting Company, George Hicks.
Good evening. Your paper today was full of news and pictures about America's greatest Navy Day. And during the past week, thousands of you who live in seaport cities were among the millions of Americans who actually went on board ships of our mighty fleet. You saw at close range many of the weapons that made our Navy so powerful. But what you probably didn't see was something down in the engine room called the high-speed steam turbine, an amazing mechanical development that promises to be just as important in peace as it was in war. Yes, this special type of high-pressure, high-temperature turbine will work wonders for peacetime shipping, just as it does for our Navy. And here's why. Because of it, more power is obtained with less steam. That means a saving of 25% in fuel, or to put it another way, an increase from 1,000 to 2,000 miles in the distance a ship can go without refueling. What's more, since a ship using this turbine needs to carry less fuel and water, there's more space available for cargo. And because the turbine itself is relatively small and light, the saving in weight means greater speed for the ship. This power miracle was one of the many developments pioneered long before the war by the Federal Shipbuilding and Dry Dock Company, a subsidiary of U.S. Steel. But there was one big problem that had to be solved before the new turbine was ready for operation. The pipe, then in use, was not strong enough to handle the tremendous heat and steam pressure it required. So Federal called in another subsidiary, the National Tube Company, and U.S. Steel's research department, to develop a special alloy steel tubing capable of withstanding the pressure and the heat. It was a problem that had long baffled pipe engineers, but the experts threw every resource into its solution and solved it they did in record time. The new turbine and the new pipe were first tried out by the Navy back in 1936 in two destroyers built at Federal Shipyard in Kearny, New Jersey. From then on, the use of this turbine was adopted in ship after ship, including the newest battleship. And today, it's standard equipment with the greatest fleet in world history. In the days to come, this modern miracle pioneered by U.S. Steel will continue to serve Americans through faster, more efficient, and more economical peacetime shipping.
We pause now for station identification. We continue with the second act of At Mrs. Beam, starring Paulette Goddard and Burgess Meredith, and featuring Brenda Forth. You remember that extraordinary pair of international crooks, Joe and Laura Dermot, whose professional activities are so greatly complicated by their stormy marital relations? Well, here they are, snugly installed in that first floor room in Mrs. Dean's genteel boarding house. Also in the room is that trunk. It does not contain, as Michoud imagines, the dismembered bodies of murdered ladies, but it does contain jewelry and other valuable articles which the Dermots have acquired during their previous travels. How to get it out of the house? Dermot will make love to Mrs. Stone, one of the more susceptible lady boarders, and cause so much trouble that he and Laura will be expelled from the house and the trunk along with them. Laura, played by Paulette Goddard, does not in the least approve of this scheme. Nevertheless, Dermot, played by Burgess Meredith, has taken Mr. Stone out into the garden for a tender conversation.
The garden is lovely in the moonlight, isn't it, Mrs. Stone?
Yes, it is.
Can we sit down on this bench?
Are you quite sure we're alone?
Oh, quite. I take it you got my note.
Hmm?
Well, what do you say?
You really mean that you'd like me to be your secretary?
Yes. Why not?
Well, I'm sure it's very kind of you, but you see...
Yes?
Oh, well, you see, my husband, he might object.
Oh, but why?
Well, you see, you travel about, don't you?
Yes.
And I should have to go with you. If I was your...
Yes, but
your...
why on earth should he object?
Well, I don't know. I think he would, you know. He just...
Yes, but why? I mean, that would be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
Yes, oh, yes, I suppose
sure.
It would. But then, you see, he's an extraordinary... Mr. Dermot, isn't there someone standing behind that tree?
Certainly not. Your husband doesn't treat you very well now, does he?
Oh, no.
Why?
Oh, no. I mean, yes. That is, I mean, I think that's all men are the same, don't you?
No, no, no. You think that I'd be the same?
I don't know, I dare say, but then you're not my husband, you see.
No, but if I was...
I don't know. After all, how could I? Oh, here's Miss Sue.
Why, Miss Sue, how nice to see you.
I believe I left my glasses out here somewhere. On the bench, perhaps?
They're not on the bench.
Oh, have you looked?
They happen to be hanging on a cord around your neck.
How silly of me. Oh, thank you, dear Mr. Dermot.
Not at all. Goodbye, Miss Sue. Now, where were we? Oh, yes. Mrs. Stone, will you take a thing up? You put your whole heart into it, don't you?
Yes, oh, yes, I expect so.
Yes. Well, you see, that's what I want. I want someone resourceful that I can trust to leave things to. See what I mean?
Oh, yes.
Can you write shorthand or type or anything?
Well, I did take it up once, Tommy. I gave it up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't write it. I didn't get on very well.
Well, that's all right. It's only a question of will. If one only has the will, one can do anything in the world. Don't you think so?
Yes, I should think. Isn't that a woman's head peeking out from behind that tree?
A woman's head? Certainly not. And then you want to see the world, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You want to do something, to react something, using your energy and character on it? Well, here's your chance, don't you?
Yes, oh, yes, I...
Yes. Of course, I haven't said anything yet. No, nothing definite. All this is very indefinite. But suppose you got an offer for secretarial work. Would you take it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I take it you would.
Oh, yes.
You would?
Yes, I would.
What about your husband?
I don't know.
You think you'd be good at it?
I don't know.
I think you would. That's why I want you. I want someone dynamic with drive.
Mm-hmm.
You think you'd have any interest in it?
Yes, definitely. I say, let's walk down to the pond where we can't be seen. I think.
See? Who's there to see?
Well, yes, come on.
Yes, dear. Go on. I've heard all I want to hear.
Hello, Laura, darling. How long have you been standing behind that tree?
Long enough, dearest.
Where are you going?
I believe that I'm just in time for an appointment with Monsieur Langford. See you later, my little cabal.
Garland.
Yes, Laura?
Oh, so soon. Why do we have to go back to the pier so soon, huh?
You know well enough why.
Oh, mon pauvre petit Colin, I've made him very angry.
When a woman criticizes the way I row a boat...
Oh, but I am not criticized. I only mentioned that the men in Bulgaria were out at Fontainebleau.
Bulgaria? What? I thought you were born in France.
Oui, the men in France where I was born...
Laura, is your father a French nobleman?
You are calling me a liar?
Oh, no, of course not. Oh, but please forgive me, my dear.
With pleasure. Kiss me, mon cher. I said kiss me.
Oh, I can't. It'll upset the boat.
Bon, let us uplift you, Bon.
Oh, Laura, stay where you are.
Good.
Thank you. So what would your husband say if he saw us together?
He would not care. He no care what I do.
Are you fond of him, Laura?
No, I hate him.
You don't.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, you can't. You couldn't sit here and say it like that if you did.
And why not? I hate him. I tell you, I loathe him. I spit on him. I hate the ground he walks on. Colin, darling, you think we can be seen from this shore?
No.
Then let's go over where we can, huh?
Oh, Laura, be serious. I want to talk to you about this. Why did you marry him if you hate him?
I not know any better, I think. I not know him as he really are.
What do you mean? How is he? Really?
He is the master. I am the slave.
A slave? Oh, Laura, you're not a slave.
Not a slave. Not a slave, you say. Why, this in here, this knee, this head, this body, this hand, every one of them are slaves. You would not think so to look at me, eh, Solange? Oh, do not look so puzzled. Speak to me.
Oh, Laura, don't get up. Please, you're a tennis. Oh, thank heaven we're at the pier. Now, get up carefully. Step on the entrance. Get ready. Now, walk off.
You see anybody watching us with all your face? By the last monsieur, a man perhaps?
No, there's nobody around.
Well, we'll walk towards the house.
On the dry land, you have more confidence, perhaps. Eh? You kiss me, maybe?
Oh, Laura.
No conversation, please. Ah, this is a very pretty spot, no?
Very pretty.
But are you say secluded, huh? Come, we look for some other spot, more open. We are not ashamed of our great love. We tell the entire world.
Oh, no.
No colin, mon
ange? No,
Well, pretty spot with the island garland of gardenia, the flower of our love.
Oh, there are no gardenias in England, Laura.
Oh, for the love of logic, how I hate men. Oh, yeah, this is pretty. Now stand still over here, huh?
Laura,
you are crazy about me, Jake.
I'm crazy about you.
You worship the ground I walk on, Jake.
I worship the ground you walk on.
And hit you. No, no good. Not good, I say. You know, I do not think you love me one bit. Also, you are too self-conscious. You think you do not look pretty. If someone should see you, well, it's so. But that is only because your old auntie is not working. You think what you look like and you are pained. But if you put in the old auntie, it looks very nice indeed. Everybody who sees you will wish in favor of you. Now, come on, we try again. Now, come on,
but,
put your arms around me. Hold me close. Closer, I say. Now, kiss me, now, kiss me.
Oh, no, 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 please, please.
Now, another one, another one.
Oh, dear. Oh, Laura, there's just someone coming.
What are you?
Oh, but Laura, please, please.
Ah, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Dermot. Oh, Laura,
good evening, darling.
Laura, please.
Well, this is nice weather we're having.
It is not, dear. You were not looking for me, were you, darling?
Oh, no, I was just out for a stroll. Well, so long, darling. See you at dinner.
Oh, oh wait, Mr. Dermot. Mr. Dermot, I can explain. I can explain everything.
Mrs. Dermot.
Oh, Mademoiselle Sue. Bonjour.
Before you go inside, I would like to apologize to you. That is, about last night.
Last night?
I mean to say, to enter your bedroom unannounced. Although I did knock, I assure you, I did knock. At an intimate moment.
Oh, and that is all right, my husband. Now we fight all the time.
You do?
Oh, night and day and night, always we fight. Sometimes one wins, sometimes the other. He is a very bad man.
Oh, my poor child. You must tell me all about yourself. Where were you educated?
Me?
Yes, you, dear.
Harvard, Princeton, Yale. No, convent in Paraguay.
Paraguay? Really, dear me, that must have been immensely interesting. Immensely interesting. Let me see. Paraguay is a brown piece between the two pink ones down near the toe.
Mm-hmm.
On the map, I mean. You're not very old, are you, dear?
No, but very experienced. With my husband, experienced from very sweet.
Your husband is a quick-tempered man.
Quick-tempered?
He would kill me just like that if you know I am unfaithful.
Well, then,
just what I was going to say. Do you think your action with regard to Mr. Colin Langford is quite wise?
Huh?
I refer, of course, to what went on when you got out of the boat.
Oh, you have seen us also.
I was in the tulip bed looking for my glasses. Now tell me, dear, what would the Marquis, your father, say? What would he say? I'm sure he would not approve of that sort of thing in your husband. What would
he? I told you, he would kill me. But what I care, he'd do the same to me, only worse.
The same? You mean he is on intimate terms with other women?
Others? Hombre!
Oh, my poor child, my poor child. Well, dear, now that you've told me, you must treat me as a friend in the matter, as, say, an elder sister. Where was it you first met, Mr. Dermot?
In Paris. He was what we call well-known roué. But this I do not know, not then. If I know then what I know now...
Yes?
I cannot say he would see me.
Oh, good. Oh, don't you frighten
me. Frighten? I'm terrified. Day and night, night and day, I live with this shadow over my heart, this insane jealousy. If you but see me look at a man, I am dead.
My dear, I guessed it. I guessed it the very first reason you arrived. I guessed that you were frightened of him. But, my dear, how rash of you to marry him. I say, how rash of you to marry.
We are not married. Now you know.
Thank you, Laura. It touched me. Touched by your confiding the truth to me. He's my husband. No, I tell you this. You know what he do to me. And you too. Yes, I am convinced he will kill you too.
Oh dear. Then we must cling together, you and I. We must cling together, must we not? And trust each other implicitly. And as a mark of my trust in you, dear Laura, I will tell you. I will tell you I know all about that big black trunk of yours. I know exactly what's in it.
You know?
Yes, dear, I know. I've known from the beginning. I can call off every article in it, item by item.
Oh,
after all, it has been well publicized, you know.
Oh, but not all. There are some items that haven't even been missed yet.
You mean there are more? More of the... Dear, your husband, I'm flying. Goodbye, dear Charles. Keep a stiff upper lip. I'll thank you.
Goodbye, Miss Jew. Well, Laura, how's your friend, Miss...
Stop it, darling, darling. She knows what's in the trunk. She just told me.
Wow, I guess that does it.
What are we going to do?
You'll have the police here in 10 minutes.
Well, maybe not. Maybe we'll have time.
No, it's no use. We wouldn't have a chance together. Here's all the money we've got. You beat it.
What?
No, go get your hat. Both of us can't get away. We'd be recognized. But one, you...
You mean you want... Aha! At last I know. At last I see you as you really are, you devil.
Oh, Laura, cut out the melodrama. Stop acting. When the police come, I'll take the blame. Alone.
Alone, that's it. Alone. But alone with whom? Alone with Mrs. Stone. That's who. Alone together.
Oh,
that's what you want. That's what you've been scheming for ever since we
Laura,
got here.
Will you please?
So that's it. And you offer me money. You want to buy me off. And then the minute I'm gone, you sneak out the back way with Mrs.
Dear.
Stone. Well, it won't work. It won't work, darling. You hear? You pulled some dirty tricks on me in your time, Joe Dermot, but this is the dirty.
Oh, darling, it's no trick. I want to save you.
Shut up. You're my husband and I'm your wife.
Oh, Laura.
Here I am and
Laura,
here I
Laura, put down that thing.
And you can go right downstairs.
Laura,
and
put
tell
down
Mrs.
that inkwell. It's full.
The curtain has fallen on the second act of the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. Tonight we are bringing you C.K. Monroe's comedy, At Mrs. Beam, starring Paulette Goddard and Burgess Meredith, and featuring Brenda Forbes. Here again for United States Steel is George Hicks.
As I speak to you now, it's 7:40 tomorrow morning in Arabia, and the sun is shining brightly on the Persian Gulf. Already heat waves are shimmering on the desert. And in an hour or two, it'll be so hot in that distant land that metal will burn bare hands. On a spit of sand jutting into the Gulf, thousands of Americans and natives are at work building a modern city. This is Ras at Tanara, the new capital of the tremendous Arabian oil field. The men who work here are thousands of miles from America, but they work with the finest machinery, their houses are air-conditioned, and their hospitals have the latest equipment. Practically all of this equipment has been carried to them via the Isthmian Steamship Company, one of the members of the United States Steel family. For almost 40 years, Isthmian has been carrying the products of America to the far places of the world and bringing back their products in exchange. The house flag of Isthmian Lines is a familiar sight in dozens of ports of the East, from Alexandria to Manila. For years, Isthmian ships have sailed round the world, from New York through the Panama Canal, to stop at places like Honolulu, Shanghai, Saigon, Manila, Java, and Singapore, and through the Suez Canal back to New York, while sister ships sailing in the opposite directions came through the Mediterranean and Red Seas to call at such ports as Bombay, Colombo, Rangoon, and Calcutta. To replace the 17 ships lost in the war, Isthmian has authorized a new and finer fleet, so that every major harbor of the East will again be a port of call for Isthmian ships as they deliver the things America makes and bring back the things America needs. Rubber and silk, pepper and mahogany, cinnamon and tea, hemp and manganese, tin and rugs, oil of sandalwood, and 1,000 other things. Those ships will link this country with the other countries of the earth for the benefit of all. That is the task of this member of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
We continue with the third act of At Mrs. Beam, starring Paulette Goddard and Burgess Meredith, and featuring Brenda Forth. Nothing is more upsetting to a really genteel boarding house than a pair of international swindlers flirting with the younger and more presentable boarders, quarreling with each other, and formulating desperate plans for escape. Miss Shu, the oldest and most respected of Mrs. Dean's boarders, has an even more sinister interpretation of the whole situation and has called the boarders together for a council of war.
I didn't tell you this before, but it happened the very night they arrived.
Why didn't you tell us?
I've been biding my time with you, and biding my time. I was leaving, you know, when I was interrupted by a series of piercing shrieks. Yes, a series of piercing shrieks. When I approached their door very carefully, their room was next to mine, you know, and I knocked. Then I opened the door and went in. And what do you think I saw?
Well, what did you see, Miss Shu?
Well, there she was, just under the window, lying in a poor little heap on the floor, unconscious. And there was he, the brute, towering over her, the perspiration streaming down his face. To protect herself from his evil design, she was throwing things at him, a book, an ashtray, anything her puny little strength could manage.
How could she throw things if she was unconscious?
And I was under the impression he had been beating her. Yes, I think I saw a stick in the corner. Yes, there was. I'm sure there was one right in the corner. And so I have called you all together for the last time before I act.
The police say it's about time. Where's my hat?
No, one moment, please. Not yet, not yet. First, I want to present you all, especially you, dear skeptical Miss Newman, the final proof. The final proof. Not 5 minutes ago, I talked to her. Yes, I talked to her. His wife, I mean.
Oh, hussy, I saw her with Colin Langford.
And she told me that he is the man, I guess, from the beginning he was, the very first night. And then she told me, I tell you, at the risk of life and limb, of life and limb, they are not married.
Legally, you mean?
Legally, or any other way.
Then why does she live with him?
I'll explain in due course. And finally, the climax, my whole theory is proved to be true in every particular. That, dear skeptical Miss Newman, is the grand climax.
What is?
The trunk. She told me what was in the trunk.
You mean she knows there are the bodies of his victims in there and she still...
In due course, dear Mr. Carmichael, in due course.
Very well, then, Miss Shu. She told you what was in the box.
What is it?
Trunk, dear. Not box.
Well, trunk, then.
What did you say was in it?
Oh, really, Miss Newman, I don't think we need go into that.
Did you say there's the bones of the last one he killed in that trunk?
Did he?
My dear, you mock me. You're doing your best to mock me. Did you say, for instance, there's the bodies of 4 dead females in that trunk, and I'm to be the next one? Did she?
Well, dear, though I forgive you freely, I must say this is most trying.
What did she say? What did she say?
Well, no shouting, please. No shouting, please.
I am not shouting.
You are. Of course, I know it's difficult for skeptical people to control.
I am not shouting.
You are.
I am not.
You are.
I am not. You are. You are.
You are. Shut up, Mrs. Stewart.
Well, a nice mess you made of this one, didn't you, darling? You and Mrs. Stone.
No, Mrs. Stone had nothing to do with it. That incredible Miss Shu. My goodness. How did she find out what was in that trunk when it was locked?
Have you talked in her sleep, dear?
Are you insinuating? She's old enough to be my mother.
Well, Mrs. Stone isn't exactly adolescent. What's a few years more?
Mrs. Stone...
Well, that's how it is. You start with the young ones like me, and then when you feel you're losing out, you just move along to the next.
You mean that I'm losing out with you? Don't make me laugh. My only difficulty has been prying myself loose from your attention.
Really?
Yes, you do cling, Laura. You always have.
I cling to you.
Well, there's one consolation about prison. At least I'll be free for...
Go on, say it.
Laura, now put down that ashtray. You've broken everything else in this room with your fits of jealous rage.
Well, that's better.
Well, at least I'll know where you are every night for the next 99 years.
We can write to each other in prison.
Ah, not me. I don't expect to be there very long, if at all.
Why not?
You know how it is with pretty girls. They sit up in the witness box, cry a little, cross their legs, and the jury comes in with a verdict. Innocent.
I see. And of course you'll marry again?
Certainly, certainly. But this time I'll pick a... Oh, I'll pick...
A bookkeeper, no doubt?
Oh, no, not at all.
An insurance agent?
No.
Oh,
no.
Grocery clerk?
No.
Proprietor of a chain store delicatessen?
No. The next man I marry will be a crook, but a good one.
Are you insinuating that I'm not a good...
You're not very good, you know. Who thought we'd be safe in London? Who wanted to hide away in a quiet, respectable boarding house? Who got us into this mess?
I did. By the great Jehoshaphat. I'll get us out.
How?
Laura, let me think. Now, our fellow boarders are still downstairs in the drawing room. I can hear their voices.
I see. You're going to talk them out of it. Tell Miss Sue not to believe what her eyes saw.
Exactly. Not only that. Not only that. Now, here comes the climax. While I'm gone, while I am fascinating those dear people with my conversation, you, Laura, will be preparing the flim-flam.
What? I dare you. I dare you to get away with it.
I accept the challenge. Now I'm in command here. Do what you're told, woman. Have everything ready. Don't forget now, like you did in Barcelona, where you forgot there was a third floor to the hotel. Goodbye. Wish me luck. I'll meet you in the car in 10 minutes.
I repeat, I wish to repeat, I am not coming.
Yes, you are.
I am not.
Ladies, please.
Ah, pardon the intrusion, dear Miss Hugh, Miss Newman. How do you do, Mr. Carmichael?
Yes, Mr. Dermot.
Indeed it is. Miss Shue, there's something urgent I wish to ask you.
Yes?
Miss Shue, my wife tells me you know something about me. May I ask what it is?
Why, nothing, I'm sure. Mr. Dermot, she says you've got a mole on your body. She says she's seen it.
Miss Newman.
And personally, I shouldn't be a bit surprised.
Mr. Dermot, I never said anything of a sort.
Yes, you did.
I didn't.
Now, ladies... Perhaps I'm lacking in a sense of humor, but what has a mole on my body got to do with...
She also said you own a big black trunk.
I do.
And she said there's something in that trunk.
Ah, now we come to it. Tell me, Miss Shue, what is in that big black trunk?
Tell him, why don't you? You've told us often enough. Very well, then. I'll tell him. Miss Shue says...
You're human.
Miss Shue says... He says your trunk is full of the bodies of dead females.
What?
He says, furthermore, that you're the Paris Bluebeard, the one that murdered 38
29.
You mean that I'm the Paris... I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
What don't you believe, Mr. Dermot?
Now, wait a minute. You think I'm a murderer, Miss Shue? Answer me.
Well, I...
Yes? Or no?
Well, yes, I do.
Fine, fine. What do I murder my victims with? Answer me.
The papers say that they say you usually use a knife.
A knife? A knife, eh? Would you say that the knife looked like this one? Miss Shue, how old are you?
This is 47.
47. Uh-huh. Miss Shue, it has come to my attention that different people scream differently when they are being cut up.
Oh.
It depends on the physique, the temperament, and the age. Oh. Yes. I've never yet murdered an unmarried woman of 47. I wonder what her screams would be like. Stand where you are. Don't move. Last one stroke of this knife, your head will be severed from your torso. That is, it would be if the knife was sharp. You know, as a matter of fact, Miss Shue, it's an antique gold letter opener. It might cut through butter, but it wouldn't cut through you. Listen, everybody, I'm not Bluebeard.
You're not?
No, of course not. Bluebeard wears a toupee. Haven't you read that?
My hair is real. Pull it, Miss Yu. Go on, I insist. Out. Bluebeard has only four toes on his left foot. Look, I'll take off my shoe. Count those toes. Five of them. Count them. They're all real. Look, I'll wiggle them for you. See that?
Then you're not. Perhaps there's been a slight mistake.
Think nothing of it, Miss Yu. Think nothing of it. Now, to show you there's no hard feelings, I present you, Miss Yu, with this antique gold letter opener. Not so much in the hope that you will cut your throat with it, but as a farewell token of my affection and esteem.
Oh.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye, dear Miss Shu. No, don't follow me, please. Look, I blow you a kiss. Goodbye.
Well, now, what do you think of
that? Oh, what a sweet, kind, generous, forgiving man. To give me this beautiful letter opener. Isn't it a beauty, dear Mr. Carmichael? Isn't it lovely, dear skeptical Miss Newman?
Has anybody seen Mr. Dermot?
He's just left, dear Mrs. Stoller. Look what he gave me for going away,
Fred. What are you doing with my letter opener in your hand? You've been sneaking into my room again. Oh. You stole it. Why, of all the cheeks I...
Bluebeard's gone. He's gone. They just drove off in a blue and green sedan.
My car. My car. Oh. They've stolen my car.
Oh. The thieves. They've cleaned out every room in my house. The candlesticks, the linens, the silver. They even took the bed warmer from Miss Jude's bed.
Not a bad car, Laura. Hope the tank's full.
Oh, darling, you're wonderful.
Yes, I think you're right. Did you take everything that wasn't nailed down, dear? No omissions this time?
Not a one. Darling, you are magnificent. I don't see how you do it.
Oh, I just talked them out of it. They were spellbound. Nothing to it. Nothing to it, really. Hand me a cigarette, Laura.
Yes, dear. Light, darling?
Light it for me. Thank you.
You're welcome, sweetheart. Darling, you're the greatest crook that ever lived.
Yep.
Better than Jesse James or Raffles or
anything. Yes, I think you're right. Thank you, dear. It's really quite simple when you know how. Of course, it's a pity I didn't... Yes, it is. Didn't get to say goodbye to Mrs. Stone. There, Laura was a woman.
What? You mean that little?
Yes, she had wonderful blue eyes and the most fascinating... Laura, what are you doing? Laura, Laura, put down that monkey wrench!
That Mrs. Deems, a production of the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here again for the Theater Guild is Lawrence Langner.
Thank you, Paulette Goddard, Burgess Meredith, Brenda Forbes, and the other members of the cast of At Mrs. Deems. Buzz, as you promised, will you now tell our audience something about what you've been doing since you left the Army?
Well, Lawrence, I've taken up a lot of different jobs. I'm doing them all together. On this last picture, Diary of a Chambermaid, I wrote the screen version of the Octave Mirbeau novel, and I co-produced the picture. And Paulette and I, I and Paulette
acted
in it.
Wait a minute. Remember, dear, top billing for me only.
Yes, I'm sorry, dear.
Buzz, how does it feel producing a picture with your wife playing the leading part?
It's very simple, Lawrence. We compromise. I just let Paulette have her own way about everything. We get along fine.
What do you say to that, Paulette?
Oh, well, it was lovely. When we didn't agree, he'd say, darling, don't throw that, and then we'd agree.
I see. Well, good luck, Buzz and Paulette. We hope your new picture will be a great success.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our play next week is Storm Over Patsy. Patsy isn't a girl, as you might imagine, but a very attractive dog. Although Storm Over Patsy has a mutt in it, it's mostly about human beings, in love and in politics. The dog who played Patsy in our original production was a great problem to us. On the opening night of the play, he stared at one of the dramatic critics and wagged his tail all through the scene, obviously trying to get a good notice. All the actors were furious because the audience kept looking only at the dog. Since television is still ahead of us, you won't see Patsy next Sunday night. This will be a break for the actors, among them being Martha Scott, Aline McMahon, Richard Widmark, and Philip Tong. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next week at the same time when we will bring you Storm Over Patsy with Martha Scott, Aline McMahon, Richard Widmark, and Philip Tong. If you'd like tonight's program of the Theater Guild on the air, prepared for each broadcast with complete information about the play and the players, simply address United States Steel Corporation, Radio Department, 71 Broadway, New York, 6, New York. The staff for the Theater Guild on the air includes Homer Thicket, director, George Condolf, producer, and Armina Marshall, executive director of the Radio Department. The music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy, and tonight's play was adapted for radio by Arthur Aaron. U.S. Steel is pleased to remind its listeners that Miss Goddard is soon to be seen in the forthcoming Paramount picture, Kitty. Your announcer, Norman Brokenshire. I want to tell you about some of the forthcoming plays in this series. Alfred London in Fontan, whom you heard some weeks ago in The Guardsman, will appear in Maxwell Anderson's Elizabeth the Queen, one of the great successes which they played for the Theater Guild in New York and on tour. Later in the series, Mr. Lunt will appear in Sidney Howard's comedy drama, Ned McCoff's Daughter. 2 weeks from tonight, we shall present Eugene O'Neill's dramatic masterpiece, Emperor Jones, and also Where the Cross is Made. Other plays scheduled are dramas by Sidney Howard, S.N. Behrman, and George Bernard Shaw. Other Guild musicals will include The Garrick Gaieties and Porgy and Bess. Among the actors who will appear in this series are Frederick Marsh, Florence Eldridge, Joan Fontaine, Walter Houston, Ethel Barrymore, and Catherine Hepburn.